the earlier you understand this, I think the better off you're going to be as an agency owner.
Welcome to the Insurance Refocus podcast, where we're highlighting real agent stories and how they are innovating to respond to the changes and challenges happening in the independent insurance industry. My name's Lindsay, and I can't wait to introduce you to my amazing co-host who just so happens to be my mom, Carrie Wallace. Mom, how are you doing today?
Lindsay, it is a beautiful, beautiful day here. The sun is shining, there is no fog, and the sky is crystal blue. I got to tell you, that's a pretty good day. What do you think?
Yeah, I had a 9 a.m. morning meeting this morning without thinking. I was on a call with a group of agents from Ohio, Indiana, and you know, someone said, "Hey, how was everybody's weekend?" I said, "Oh, it was so beautiful. It was 75, and I went outdoor to a boat show," and they were not very happy with me for the rest of that call. So lesson learned, know the geographical location of all participants when you're about to brag about the weather.
Amen, man. Amen. Here's the deal. We're going to talk about something today that, you know, everybody can plan for where they want to live. That's what I'm going to say, right? So everyone can make, these are life choices. Maybe we shouldn't brag about it, but these are all really nice life choices, right? Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I'm super excited for today. We are welcoming him back, a wonderful guest. His name is Eric Garcia of Plan Wisely. Eric, thank you so much for joining us for podcast number two in our series.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It's always flattering when someone says, "Hey, come back on the show."
Yeah, we're super excited. So for those of you that may have missed the first in the series, we started with, if you're not an agency owner, what kind of financial planning do you need to do to set yourself up in order to become an agency owner? What are the things you should think about from a personal financial standpoint? And today we want to move into, what does it look like? What do you need to think about as you start your agency, maybe from scratch to establish? Like, what are those financial things personally that also blend really well with the business finance things that we do as well that you should be thinking about? Because we want our agents to be as healthy personally, financially as they can be, so they have as many options as possible. So, Eric, why don't you take that topic and tell us where you would even start? Because you are an agency owner. You started an agency scratch. Is that correct?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. Back about, 13 or so years ago. So where do you start? Wow. There's so many different places we can start. Here's the first thing I would say. If you're, let's say you've hung a shingle out, you're selling insurance. Okay. That's where we are. The first thing I would say, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with personal finances, but I think it does direct the decisions that you make with your money, is you got to be really, really careful who you're taking your cues from as a business owner. The challenge that I find with a lot of, even not only early agency owners, but just agency owners in general, is that we kind of have this person in mind. We have a friend in the space or a colleague in the space. And we're like, I want to be like that person. And the reality is they might be 10, 15 years ahead of us. They might have had a parent in the business. They might have a situation that was totally different than ours. I got friends who are financial advisors who came from the banking side. And the banks, they were financial advisors in the banks close, and they become a financial advisor independent on their own, and the bank gives them all these assets to manage. And I'm over here like, "Oh my gosh, you just started. How'd you get so big?" I'm over here grinding away, building from scratch. So we don't know anyone's story other than our own. So I'm not saying don't look towards other people. What I'm saying is be very careful who you take your cues from and who you're trying to be like as a young agency owner, because you will spend a lot of money on technology that you don't need. You'll spend a lot of money.
Yeah. And
yeah, go ahead.
I mean, jumping in here before we move off that, like, don't look at other people. That is so hard. Speaking from a young person, growing up with social media, I was just listening to a podcast about this the other day. Growing up as a young person with social media, you are constantly, every single week, there are different trends, there are different things to keep up with. So that is super easy to say, but harder to do in reality, you know?
So we call that social indifference. So if you listen to my podcast show, you hear me talk a lot about The Millionaire Next Door. The latest book is The Next Millionaire Next Door, which was written by Stanley's daughter, Sarah Falau. And she measures different metrics that kind of lead to financial success. And one of them is people who are financially successful are socially indifferent. So they're not, you know, I don't care that my neighbor is driving a Mercedes. I'm perfectly happy driving a Honda. I don't care that you have a Rolex. I'm perfectly happy with my Timex, right? Tells the same time as your Rolex. Not that there's anything wrong with those other things. It's just, I'm indifferent to what others are doing. So that's really important. Now, again, that doesn't mean that like you stymie ambition and like, I want to grow into a big agency. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'll give you a personal example. When I first launched the agency, this was in 2010, I realized that I'm a financial advisor. I'm a financial planner. I spend my time talking about money, investing dollars. I don't have time to learn the independent agency space. So I need to shortcut my learning curve. So I joined that PIA. I joined Big I. I went to the conference. I met as many people as I could meet. Ended up running into Jason Cass in 2011 and getting to know him really well. I'm like, oh, I can shortcut my learning curve by surrounding myself with people in the mastermind. And I got to know Miles Merwin. I think you know Miles. Miles is a fantastic operator. I'm like, I want to be like Miles. Well, you know, Miles writes with the big national companies, and I had like literally zero national contracts. You know, all his carriers had really good technology. None of our carriers had good technology. So like, I'm going to model myself after Miles. And I'm like, after I don't know how long, I'm like, I can't do that. It's not going to work. So I have to find somebody whose agency works similar to mine. And I met Bogus Hansel, you know, Bogus up in Chicago. I'm like, this is perfect. Most of Bogus's business is E&S, just like ours. Bogus works in a largely immigrant population, just like us. Bogus works in a business with his brother. Oh, my brother's was my first business partner. I said, okay, this is something that I can model a little bit more around. So let me lean more into that. So that's what I mean by be careful who you take your cues from. Again, it's not directly related to finance, but it will impact and influence the decisions that you make.
No doubt. So Eric, talk to me about this. You know, you talked about technology, you talked about markets, you talked about all kinds of things. So when you first start out your business, you have to make some core decisions. You have to decide, am I going to invest in people? Am I going to invest in tech and infrastructure? Am I going to have a threshold of what I absolutely have to pay myself? Those are also very different things. And what I mean by that is I have a startup business also, but I'm very fortunate. I'm married, and I'm married to someone who makes a nice living. So what I had to pay myself as I started my business is very different than someone that's single that has to support themselves and other people with what they're doing. So talk to me about those kinds of decisions in the beginning. Again, that also widens the gap and the people that you can actually take your cues from.
So let's reverse engineer what you just said. You said, I've got a startup and I'm fortunate to be married to someone who makes a good income. So I don't have to draw as much for my business. Okay. So I think the first step is asking yourself the question, how much does my business need to generate for me so I can survive, so I can pay the bills and do what I need to do? Let's start there, right? Do I need to generate, you know, only $20,000 a year because my spouse works? Or do I need to generate $75,000 a year because I'm married, I have three kids, and my wife is a stay-at-home mom? Two very different scenarios. Two very different pieces of advice that I would give to someone. And that's one thing is that, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, this is me, I'm a scratch agency. None of this advice is prescriptive. There's a reason why you hire Kerry Wallace. There's a reason why you hire me as a financial planner, is because your situation is incredibly unique and it demands specific advice. So there's like, you can go look at, I made this mistake too. I'm like, oh, I'm going to read all the best practices, the big, sure. What is it, the best practice that they put out every year. I'm like, I'm going to go read that. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm a $300,000 revenue agency, and I like there's no real category.
Yeah, good They're luck finding yourself in there. Yeah, good luck.
Right, like I don't know who to benchmark mm-hmm. myself to.
Right,
that's what I hate about like personal finance budgeting gurus, where they're like, you know, 35% of your income should go towards your housing. Well, wait a minute, you don't know my housing market. You don't know my insurance is $7,000 a year. Is that factored into your 35% or whatever? So like things are very specific and very unique. So you need to start with what do I need to pay my bills? And that's where you start. Because you got to think as a scratch agency, and here's something else that I think that early agency owners need to think about. You are an owner of a business that happens to be in insurance. Okay, so you own, let's just say you're by yourself, you don't have a business partner. You own 100% of this company. You own 100% of the stock. Okay, so not only do you make money by showing up and working and selling insurance, but you're building net worth by growing the value of that asset, the company, the stock in that company, okay, however you're organized as a business. All right, you have to understand that my efforts today not only drive revenue or income to me today, but my efforts today are also building an asset that one day I could possibly sell. That's a mindset that I think is really, really important that's lost on a lot of agency owners. When I first started our independent agency, I came from the captive world. Then I left insurance completely. So owning an independent agency was a new thing to me. Right? Like it was when you work for a captive, my God, I think today, like how easy was it? Like 90% of the business decisions that I need to make as a business owner are made for me. Right. I might not like them, but they're made for
me. Right.
And that was something that I had to change in my thinking, like, oh my gosh, this is no different than me owning Apple. Right. It's just a business that I'm, you know, it's closely held that I, you know, operate. I'm responsible to drive it. So I think that early on, is to put on the mindset of a business owner. And an estate attorney friend of mine early on gave me this advice. And this is really, really important. I've alluded to this already. He said, as a business owner, Eric, you make money two different ways. One, as a worker, as an employee, okay? You show up and whatever function you play, you sell, you pay yourself a commission. You manage, you pay yourself a fee to manage. That as business owners, we should pay ourselves a rate that we would pay somebody else to do the function that we do. No more, no less. Okay. Just because you own the business doesn't mean you can pay yourself a giant salary. Pay yourself what you would pay someone else to do the function of it. Like, I don't know. I know there are some percentages out there. You would, as a manager of a business, you would pay yourself 5% of the revenue or 10% of revenue, whatever the benchmarks are.
Well, here's the thing, Eric, just so you know, what you just said would solve a lot of the questions that I get when I value an agency and they want to know what the owner compensation should be. And my answer is it depends on what kind of owner you are and what it would take to replace you. So an owner that's no longer producing, that is owner just in name, is a different number than someone who's managing, running the operations, and still manages a book. Those are two very different numbers that have to be in that P&L. Because the reality is, if you step away, that business will have to replace those functions in order to continue to operate and perform the way that it has been. So it is imperative that the amount that you need to replace it is in that P&L. But people think, I can take all of my owner comp out, and that's what my profitability will be, and that's the number that I should use in order to determine the value of my agency. But that's not accurate, and not all owners are created equal. So what you said is so incredibly important. Pay yourself the amount you would have to pay somebody else to do those jobs. It's just the basics.
Now here's where financial planning kind of if this was a Venn diagram, this is where the overlap is coming, right? You as a CFO are going to say, hey, you got to pay yourself what you would pay someone to do that job, right? That's a function as CFO that you would tell someone, right? But, you know, Carrie, I'm not selling anymore. And like, you know, I was making a lot of money when I was producing, and I'm not producing anymore. And I still need to make that kind of money. Well, the second way we make money, right? First way is employee. The second way is as an owner. How do owners make money? From profit, right? I make the majority of my earnings from our agency through profit, not through salary.
Sure.
Right? Because I don't, I mean, I don't, I'm 10% of my time might be actually working in the agency. So I can't pay myself a big fat salary. I can't, I would literally rob the agency of revenue to do what it needs to do to grow. So I have to make money through profitability by making sure we're efficient, making sure we use technology as efficiently as possible, making sure we're not overstaffed or not understaffed, you know, strategy and whatnot. So we make money two different ways. And it is so important that you understand that early on as an agency owner. I'm actually a little bit jealous when I work with agency owners and they understand that at the beginning of their agencies, because it took me a while to learn that. It was a painful experience for me to have to learn that.
Yeah, it's a evolution of thinking. And if you don't understand it, once you start creating profit and you don't understand, you know, you don't understand that you also have to have room to invest in your agency. So if you pay yourself the wrong amount or pay yourself too much, you create a lifestyle agency that now it's tough to pull back and actually invest in order to be able to grow. So it's this, it's a stair step, in my opinion. You've got to create the infrastructure, which means you aren't able to pay yourself as much because you don't have very much. Then now you have the infrastructure, you have the production. Now you can pay yourself more, but you have to continue to invest or you will plateau. And there's a reason why independent insurance agencies, 83% of them are under 1.25 million, and a large majority of that are under 500,000 in revenue. There just is, because it's difficult to know that balance. It truly is.
Well, sometimes we're cheap as agency owners. Like, we don't, like, why would I spend that kind of money when I can do that, right? You know, I pay a lot of money for IT support. People think I'm crazy as a business owner. I said, why do you pay so much money? It's not that hard these days to fix your computers. It's because when a computer breaks or something goes wrong, the disruption that it is on me, on my time. And again, I'm looking at my time as a business owner. Guys, we are business people. We are business owners. A lot of times we sell our time. If you don't think about, you know, making money, you know, hourly as your time, then you're thinking about it wrong. You need to understand what your value is, what you should be making, what your rate is per hour, not per policy I could sell. Okay. And when you back yourself into it, I am paid way too much to have to go reconnect someone's computer to the printer, even though it's an easy function. I can't do
totally.
It. The disruption is just, you know, but so I think that's something so important that early agency owners need to understand, not just early, but let me put it this way. The earlier you understand this, I think the better off you're going to be as an agency owner, as you progress in your agency, when you understand that you are operating a company that you own the stock for.
Yeah. So creating
my agency. Yeah.
So creating cash flow for today is only one part of this. And that cash flow can be what you pay yourself as your role inside the agency, as well as a reasonable distribution, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you got to think the appreciation of the stock, you won't realize that until you sell in the future, whether you bring on a partner or you sell it to a third party completely. Right, I can buy Apple stock today at 180 or 190, whatever it's trading at, and assuming it never pays a dividend, I don't realize growth on that until I sell it. Right, the difference is Apple stock is fairly liquid. My independent agency is not necessarily very liquid. I mean, yes, I can sell it; it's absolutely a saleable asset. But I mean, how long does an average sale take when it's all said and done? By the time you're done negotiating and valuing, I mean, we could talk about. I've seen some of these things drag on for 12 months, if not longer.
So I have a question. How should, when you're in this stage of still building your agency, how should you be aligning your personal finances to the agency finances?
That's a good question. And this is one of the challenges, I think, for business owners. I think it becomes easier the bigger we get, just because we realize that at some point we're going to realize that our personal finances and our business finances are two very separate animals. I think early on, those things get really confused just because there's just not a lot of revenue. Like, you realize that like all the revenue I'm creating is supporting my lifestyle. So the business checking account is my personal checking account to some degree, because there's just not a lot of profit. Again, starting to understand what do I need to fund my lifestyle? And then as you grow, being very conscious of lifestyle creep, right? I'm making more money. I can pay myself more. So all of what happens is as the business income increases, my personal expenses are increasing proportionately, and I'm not finding myself in any better financial position other than I buy more expensive things. And that's okay. That might be your gig. And if that's your gig, that's fine. But you're not creating or generating more wealth. And what happens is you're going to get to a point where you might be a little bit tired in the business and you might want to step away. You might want to go hire, you know, someone to do the stuff that you don't want to do. And then you're going to realize, wait a minute, I don't have any money to do that because I got to pay myself $250,000. I can't afford $60,000 to go hire someone to do other stuff because I need all that money for myself. And then all of a sudden you're putting in way more time in the business than you ever anticipated. Because we go into business for ourselves because we don't want anyone to tell us what to do. We want control of our time, the freedom of owning a business. But yet if we don't plan right, the business owns us. We're being dictated to by our addiction to our income.
So I like to say that it's creating options for yourself when you take a health checkup of your agency and actually look at what could the profitability be if certain things weren't being run through the business. The reality is anyone who runs a small business knows that there are discretionary expenses that are put through the business as a tax strategy to minimize tax. Like that's just a reality. But if you get so used to those expenses running through your business and you elevate your lifestyle or you become dependent on those things happening, that's a choice. That means that money could be reallocated and hire a new CSR or hire a new producer or invest in technology or invest in marketing. Sometimes when you go through a health checkup or evaluation, or you have somebody look at your business with objective eyes, you start to see that there is this potential, but you've got to decide, are you going to reallocate that money towards growth, or do you want to keep spending the money the way that you're spending it? I think that's where personal and business finances come in at impasse, right?
Yeah. What I'll often say is I help agency owners create diversification outside like their main asset. Like we own this illiquid stock. I just can't go sell it. If I need $20,000 to pay tuition for my kid's college, I just can't go sell Garcia Insurance stock on the open market. It just doesn't exist. And I can't just go sell a little, you know, a few shares to my business partner because it's just complicated, right? But if I've been intentional in building liquidity, then I've got options. Maybe I don't need to spend the money. Maybe I do. I don't know, but I have options. I'm not backed into a corner. And that's what liquidity does. We also have this aversion sometimes to cash. And I get it. We're entrepreneurs and we don't want our resources. We don't want our capital sitting idle or my God, my business grew by 25% last year. Like, man, I got an extra $100,000. Let me just reinvest it in my business and I'll grow by another, you know, 25%. Well, it doesn't always happen that way. We're allergic sometimes to cash or liquidity. And I think we have to change that thinking that, man, you know what? I want a giant amount of money of cash in, I call it a work optional account, because at one day it's going to make work optional for me because the money in this investment account is going to generate revenue or income for me that I could replace a function of my job that I don't like, or just get out of the business completely, right? It's making work optional, but it takes an intentional decision for me to start doing that. Now it could be, you could be a real estate person. I personally don't like real estate. My dad didn't like owning real estate. So like, or it was just kind of ingrained in me. Like, I don't want to be a landlord. Cause like, so like, I don't like real estate for that reason. Not because it competes. Some people are like, oh, you just think it competes with investment dollars for you. No, I just don't like real estate, especially in our market in New Orleans, where taxes and insurance are so high that, I mean, it really has to make a lot of sense to a lot of these real estate deals. When you break it down, the return isn't as high as you think it is when you start factoring in some of the other costs associated with real estate. I'm not against it. But real estate isn't necessarily liquid. If it's cash flowing, that's one thing. But the point is liquidity, cash flow, if everything is tied up in your income and your lifestyle, you're going to have problems. And early scratch agencies are in a position to make hard decisions today so that 5 or 10 years from now, they don't have to make those hard decisions.
Yeah, making disciplined decisions and informed decisions, I think catapults you past those that maybe don't know how to make those decisions. So let's just recap here. If you're a scratch agency and you are working towards creating the cash flow for today and the equity for tomorrow, what are some the key things you should do? I think that number one, you said find someone that is relatable to compare to. Don't compare yourself to everyone out there. Is that a fair summary of what you said?
Yeah. Pick your cues, take your cues from people that align with your mission, your values. Surround yourself with professionals that are going to keep you accountable to that and kind of prod you along.
Yeah. So what other bits of advice would you give them? So definitely, set the right expectations for what to compare yourself to and really make sure either that or don't compare at all and set your own expectations, right?
Yeah. I think it's good to have people to look up to. You kind of want to have a group of people that you can look up to. So I think it is, you want to go into things with or at least have a network of people who've done it, who've been there that you can tap into, right? You might not have a ton of money, but you might have a ton of social and relational capital with people who've been there who can really pour into you. And let me tell you, our industry is so great at that. There's so many people who are willing to take time and pour into you. In this, making these decisions early, the discipline that we're talking about, making it early, the impact and influence that it has on personal finances is debt. We come into the agency sometimes with debt. Sometimes we have to take debt on to fund our agency. And I'm not against debt. I just think we need to be very critical of any time we borrow money to consider whether or not there's a justified return on investment on taking that. Like the interest that I'm paying to service that debt, is it worth the potential return, right? So sometimes it does make sense to borrow money to hire a producer. That's a pretty good no-brainer, especially early on. But do you keep doing that endlessly? I don't know. Maybe not. But if I'm not making these hard decisions early and lifestyle creep has set in, and look, I've talked to successful agency owners and they're doing great and they're cash flowing a lot of money. And they're at this point where it's like, oh my gosh, like I don't have access to one of the things that I don't understand is when I do understand it, but when you make a lot of money and you never have access to money, like my dad was incredibly successful in the agency, in his captive agency. He does some work for me today, keeps him busy. He's 75 and he loves talking to clients, just loves his clients. I remember as a kid, my dad never had money. Like I was like, I don't understand this. And he wasn't a big spender. But, he would, fix up the kitchen, right? Drop $50,000 in the kitchen or put a pool in. And all those things are cool. I'm not complaining. I benefited from them all. And my dad, I've learned more from my dad than anything. And if you're listening, I love you. And I'm not criticizing you at all. You have made phenomenal decisions in your life. He cash flowed my college.
Yep.
Right? It's a very immigrant value, right? He came to this country. We're gonna put our kids through college.
But right. Relationship with money, if you haven't had someone model that, it can be a tricky thing to know what to do with it. And I think there's a lot of independent insurance agencies that are self-made, millionaires that had never had the money before then. So I think creating that discipline and creating an appreciation for that and seeking some guidance. You know, Eric, I think a lot of people think financial planning advice is for those that have money to invest. But the reality is financial planning advice is for those that want to plan around money at every stage. There's really isn't a stage that you shouldn't be thinking about, how do I plan for this? Because, you know, I came from the same situation. My parents did not have a ton of money. We had to learn what to do with money because that wasn't a thing that was modeled in my house, you know? So it's it's an interesting dynamic. You can't take for granted that you know what happens when you earn some wealth. You have to learn what to do with that. And I think seeking out advice is one of the best things you can do.
Yeah. And I will say that my industry, the financial advising industry, has not been great about meeting people kind of where they are. And the way we traditionally have been compensated doesn't really afford itself to a young startup scratch agent saying, hey, I want to hire a financial advisor. Well, how much money do you have to invest? I got, you know, $17,500 in my old 401k that I can roll over. It's like, I can't work for you for $170 a year, whatever it is, right? And financial planning was typically kind of, I'm not going to say, you know, specific to high net worth, but it was really only marketed to high net worth people. It hasn't been that long. And I would even say it's still not the common model. And, you know, I early on watched people in the space, and that's kind of where I adopted my model of more of a, for lack of better term, subscription-based financial planning, right? You're going to pay for your financial planning advice the same way you're going to pay for, I don't know, Netflix monthly. Why? Because finances don't just happen one time. You don't just need advice one time. There's constant input, constant variables that we need to contend with. And on top of that, you brought it up. You said, relate to money. I learned this from hanging out with all my family therapist friends. They call it the family of origin, right? You have all these family of origin issues about how you've learned to relate with money that you're totally unaware of, that is running in the background, driving your decisions. And sometimes they're not, Billy Williams always says, anytime you put emotion in front of any decision, especially a financial decision, there's a good chance you're going to make the wrong decision.
Right, right.
And man, does money evoke a lot of emotion from us. Either we're afraid, and these are the two worst emotions to make any financial decision on. Fear, I'm afraid. Have a scarcity mindset, so you know that drives bad decisions. And greed, I want more, I want to grow as big as I can. And I see that often in the insurance space, is either super ambitious or they're super fearful. So to your point, and maybe this sounds self-serving, I think every single entrepreneur needs to have a team of professionals around them that is helping them make decisions in their business and financial decisions in their personal life for the life cycle of their business.
That's right. That's right. Well, I could not agree more, Eric. Well, I got to tell you, I think that we covered creating cash flow for today and equity for tomorrow. I cannot wait to have you on again to talk about preparing for the next step, where an agency owner needs to think about how do they prepare for the transition of ownership and their step into retirement. Thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast and stay hanging with us to do this series, Eric. If someone's listening to this and they want to reach out to you and talk to you about their situation, how can they reach you?
Yeah, you can visit me on my website, plan-wisely.com, W-I-S-E-L-Y.com. And there's a link to my calendar. I'd love to have a conversation with anyone so I can tell them how we work with agency owners.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Eric.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Insurance Refocus podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to hit subscribe and leave us a review so you'll never miss us. Want to learn more about how Agency Focus can help you grow your agency? Head to agency-focus.com or email Carrie directly at carrie@agency-focus.com. If you need to get in touch with me, feel free to shoot me an email at lindsay@agency-focus.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.